Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot. Whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever, that's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. Speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm going to be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
Awesome. Thank you so much, David. Hello to the participants who just joined us. Welcome. And just a little bit about Michelle. So Michelle is the change maker, speaker, trainer, trauma specialist, supporting game changing visionaries in their expansion through internal glass ceilings and walls so they can live in their life's purpose and fulfill their destiny. Mics to you, Michelle.
Thank you, Oksana. A lion cub becomes a lion. In fact, a lion cub is always a lion. I read those words then in 1987, and an intensity of relief swells up within me that doesn't make complete sense to me then. I go back and reread the words. I don't know or understand why they enter me in such a profoundly reassuring way. A lion cub becomes a lion. In fact, a lion cub is always a lion. I closed the book and set it aside. I didn't know at that time I'd be here today, more than 30 years later, sharing what I've learned and experienced during those years about embodiment and the possibility it holds for us as a pathway to experiencing our highest human potential. And as the title for this presentation includes, it's a chasm that actually must be crossed. So embodiment is a word that we might all use, but we don't all have the same understanding of it. We don't all have the same definition, nor necessarily even the same experience of being embodied. And so it's not surprising that we don't speak about it in the same or sometimes even similar ways. And although we each have a body, that doesn't mean by a long shot that we're all fully anchored and connected and experiencing life fully within this body. From experience, I'd wager 3% is probably a liberal guess at the number of us who are really approaching full embodiment. And trust me, I'm not one of those 3%. But for those of you who would love to reach your full human potential, or even your full spiritual potential, embodiment is a key factor. And so this is what I want to explore with you today, not in an academic way though, but in a way where through story and image and simple language, we can deepen our own felt experience and understanding of embodiment. Because many of you in your work with others in life, where this understanding can be immensely helpful. So I want to model ways that we can talk about it in simple, understandable, and accurate enough language. I found that the easiest way to really understand embodiment is to look at disembodiment. Most of us live in that state, whether we're aware of it or not, at least to some degree. And there's a cost to staying in this state. So today I'm going to spend quite some time exploring disembodiment in this embodiment conference. If we understand how we become disembodied, we can more easily reverse engineer the process back to embodiment and thereby arriving back in the increasingly fuller state of embodiment, we can experience all the gifts it holds for us. And that includes greater access to what we need to experience if we want to be in our full human and even spiritual potential. So the process of disembodiment can start very young. And let me share, I want to share my slide and I can't find that on the screen here.
You've muted yourself, Michelle.
Okay, I'm not seeing on my screen here where I can, I know how to share. I share every day, but I'm not seeing with my screens here.
What aren't you seeing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There we go. I have to enlarge your screen. My mistake. There. Good. So the process of disembodiment can start very, very young through our simple, everyday, but not so pleasant experiences. Our process of disembodiment can start even much younger than this. In the slide that you're looking at, you can see that this is a very powerful experience for this child. You can see and feel her fear and the overwhelming level of distress in her little body. The level can be overwhelming, even though the content of the situation, whatever she might have done.
Michelle, can I jump in and just say that we're seeing your slide notes, we're not seeing the slides?
I'm sorry. Okay, so let me try again. Let's share this screen. And here. Do you see it now?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Great. So you can see this little child. Is having a very powerful experience. Thank you so much, David. And you can see and feel her fear and the overwhelming level of distress in her little body. That level can be overwhelming, even though if whatever happened there in her family situation might not be that grave from an adult perspective. So notice while she's standing there, how she's pulling back as if she could. If she would, she'd pull right back out of her little body. Dissociation sounds like a really good idea to her. It wouldn't make this moment feel so bad. And as you look at this slide, as she pulls back, you can see she's tightening her neck and her upper back. This is a protective response, not to protect her from her mother. This actually helps her not to feel the fear and the distress so intensely. Emotions are experienced in the body. So if she can find a way to not feel the emotion in her body so intensely, this would make that moment a whole lot less difficult. She has a little body with a big emotion in this moment. Her little nervous system is on overload. It's too much to experience her body. She can't escape, but she can dissociate. She can disconnect from her body and emotions where she's feeling so much discomfort. In life, we can have many experiences that bring up intense feelings. Some of us might have experiences of natural disasters or storms or floods or fires, tornadoes, hurricanes, and those experiences can be really scary. More common experiences can happen when we're possibly not allowed to express ourselves in many different ways. Don't feel that, don't think this, don't think that, don't do this. Don't cry, don't feel. We can also have losses in our life. Losses of family, pets, friends, a favorite toy, a cherished possession, a home. And with that, we can experience grief. We can have people who haven't always been kind to us. And the pain can be so difficult, we find a way to disappear, to disconnect so we don't feel it. This can be true in childhood, but it can also be true in adulthood. With shame and blame, for example, we shrink, trying to manage the feelings that can again be overwhelming in our bodies. Some of it happens before we're even born and in the birth process. This is the whole field of prenatal and birth psychology. I actually have a video showing the impact on a fetus of parents fighting. The shock the fetus goes through, it can be quite activating. So I decided not to show the slide, but I at least want to mention it here to know that this process of disembodying can begin even before we're born and in early infancy. As we see in all of these experiences, strong, overwhelming emotions are part of the experience that make unbearable experiences. We see that all these experiences, strong, overwhelming emotions are part of the experience that makes unbearable experiences unbearable. Oops. So what can happen is we can have experiences that move us into strong emotions of anger, confusion. We can have strong experiences that move us into despair, not knowing what we are here to do, not knowing the directions we need to take. And when we have those experiences, we close down. You've lived life and you've had these experiences. And not all of our experiences in life are bad or close us down. But when they do, it contributes to our moving into increasing states of disembodiment. We need to acknowledge and understand these experiences and the impact that they had. We lose our capacity and willingness in our body to stay in our bodies. And when our nervous systems and other parts of our physiology and our bodies are overwhelmed by our strong emotional responses to daily life, we find that we're actually made to be able to protect ourselves in these ways that I'm going to present to you now. Great. So when we have these strong experiences, it's very natural, as we saw in the first slide with that little child, that our muscles can tense. They can move into contraction and tension, or they can collapse and move into a flaccidity. Those are ways where we then don't feel the emotion so intensely. Emotions can be held in our organs, leading to health issues, digestion problems, liver and kidney ailments. We can have disrupted breathing patterns, or we can move into behaviors that are aggressive. We can withdraw, we can have addictions, we can develop compensation type behaviors. We can also have one emotion kind of take in and be a protective response so we don't feel an emotion that's more challenging for us. For example, we can be people who tend to go towards sadness because anger is too much. Or we can be people who are angry all the time because to touch the deep depths of our own grief and sadness would be too much. Or we can feel fear more easily than shame. So we can also use our emotions as defenses against other uncomfortable emotions. All of these are protective coping responses. And what's important about them is when we've used them, they work. They've helped to temper strong emotional states so we weren't wiped out by them. And each of these protective coping responses involves us moving into some degree of disembodiment, disconnecting from the discomfort of that emotion in our body. And over time, many of these protective patterns get locked in place and we're left compromised, closed down, not fully accessible to ourselves or others. And we move forward in life in varying degrees of what I call a mummified or disembodied state. It's an adaptive state, and often we don't even really know we're in it. This mummy wrapping that I have depicted here, it represents that adaptive state of being constrained, lost, not totally there. It acts as a shell, and we're in there, but to varying degrees, depending on our life history, we're not embodied. It might not happen all at once. We might have an experience where there's a great loss or a broken heart, and we might find that the muscles of our chest and back tighten up, leaving us mummified or constricted or disembodied in our upper body. Or we might have an experience that disconnects us from our lower torso or viscera, a punch in the stomach by a bully at school, or holding extreme rage with no outlet for expressing it. We might have a terrifying experience where all of our energy rises to be able to fight or flee. And we might disconnect from our legs, so we're no longer grounded or embodied there, standing firmly on the earth and able to feel the solidity of our own bodies and the positive state that that can grant us. And over time, if we have enough of these experiences from in utero on through life, we can end up in a pretty mummified state. Now, it's very easy at this point to get to a place of saying, not me. This isn't me. I'm in my body, I do yoga, I dance, I'm an athlete. The problem is we don't usually know we're disembodied because it becomes our natural adaptive state. The problem with being, being able to relate to disembodiment or accept that we might be disembodied in some or all of our body is that we can still function and we don't even know we're compromised. We can do and accomplish things in our disembodied state, but our full human potential, which is different than our accomplishments and achievements, can never be experienced in this state. We can move forward in life in a kind of confident and forward-moving way. Or we can be go-getters, but still be in this mummified or disembodied state. We can be a raging maniac or totally laid back. We can be shy and pull away from people. Or we can be totally fun-loving and sociable. All of this can happen in a disembodied state. And when you're disembodied, the legacy of painful experiences, large and small, from your past, adding up and bringing you into the state, you're going to be limited in some way. You're going to be limited from the full expression of who you really are. So, as I've been saying, disembodiment, it's not a state of disconnection. It is a state of disconnection within the body, but it's not your personality or your behavior patterns or other qualities that you have. Disembodiment is a compromised state. It's a disconnected state. And we've all had experiences that have left us disconnected. They just happen in life to all of us. A big one happened for me when I was in my second year of university. I'm sitting in the back seat. My dad and mom are in the front seat, and they're driving me back to the University of California at Davis. We're driving along and my dad's talking. It's not a conversation, he's just talking. And I'm only half listening when everything stops. All the sounds coming from the front seat recede into a muffled blur. He's Italian, so I can tell he's still talking because his hand on the steering wheel that is there, but his other hand is still in Italian talking mode. But for me, all the sounds have receded into a distant hum. Did he really just say what he said? He had. He'd actually said, "I send my daughters to college, so if their husbands die, they can get a good job and still support the children." He said it with such a tone of foresight and nobility. I could feel something in me disintegrating, crumbling. I'm heading back to school where I have big science exams this week and a lot to read, and I'm not the fastest reader. I'm smart, but it's still a commitment and even a grind to do this day after day, week after week. And I'm not even clear yet why I'm doing this all, but my dad just said he's sending me to university to be the backup plan for some man who doesn't even exist yet and might never exist. And if he does exist, he might just up and die on me, leaving me to take care of the kids who also don't exist and might never exist. This is the future my dad is investing in for me. I continue to dissolve within myself. Tears rise in my heart. I'm out of here. Something in my dad's words had landed and taken root in me. Any sense that my life was in a process of emerging into some real or purposeful possibilities, it all vanished. I move forward, but disconnected from any sense of direction or purpose. What I also disconnected from was the pain of a parent having so little belief in me, and the hurt of that. And in that disconnecting from the hurt, I also disconnected from parts of my body that held the hurt. Remember, emotions are combinations of sensations that are held in the body. Stop for a moment and think. You've probably had your own experiences of disconnection. Disconnection from your confidence, disconnection from your hearts or your power or your joy or your health and vitality. With each of these connections, you can expect some degree of disembodiment takes place. So with this state of disembodiment, that life kind of plops on top of all of those of us with a body that need the body for the full expansion into who we can and want and need to be, change needs to happen. From the time I was little, I loved that things could be changed into something else. And I really loved taking part in the change process. I could take boring sticks and tree branches and transform them into a fort. My parents gave me a kid's chemistry set for Christmas one year, and I could mix in test tubes, stuff from little glass bottles, and concoct all kinds of seemingly miraculous changes and nasty smells that I took total delight in. But I also knew there were other things that weren't so easy to change. Things where life would be better if they did change. Like if my parents didn't fight, I wouldn't feel so scared. And if my friend Jill, who was a bully, wouldn't be so mean, I wouldn't feel like I wanted to be mean back. And as a child, if the Soviet Union and the Cold War could just disappear, that could make things better and more relaxed for everyone. The only solutions I'm giving as a child to try to bring about change on these big things are wishing stars, four-leaf clovers, and prayer. My mom's begun prayer. Sometimes these work and sometimes they don't. When it works and the change I want happens, whew, I feel relieved and happy. And when it doesn't work, I doubt and I feel powerless. And I don't know if it's me or the wishing star or God or the four-leaf clovers that messed up. Because why wouldn't a heartfelt wish or prayer work if I'm asking for a change for something that's really good? It's years later now, and I believe more than ever that change can happen. And positive change is what this conference is all, what this embodiment conference is all about. Moving from our state of disembodiment into ever, ever increasing states of full embodiment because of what can happen in that state. Once we really get that life's more challenging experience have left us in this compromised state, a conference like this can help to shine a light on it for hundreds of thousands in the world, like the Embodiment Conference is doing. We can then take the reins and with our awareness commit to a return to full resonance in this body, where within every cell of our body, we can again begin to experience life more fully and in ways we didn't even realize we were missing. So how do we do this? And I'm going to see if I can share my screen again. Can you do that from your side, Dave? Because it's not showing up here for me for some reason.
Not that I'm aware of.
Here we go. Here we go.
Got it?
Yeah, I got it. Here we go. So earlier I spoke about that there's a way that we close down and move into a disconnected state. And what happens when we close down is this closed down state has an anatomy to it. As we can see on this slide, if we go inside, we end up with beliefs, limiting beliefs, or brainwave patterns that aren't at their optimal, or attitudes that aren't necessarily working for us. We can have air stress in different areas of our brain, or we can have, what else do we have here? We can have emotions that get lodged in our body, as we've spoken about so extensively already. Or we can have defense strategies and behaviors that protect us. And when we have these, there's a consequence to this. Closing down helped us at the time. It made it more tolerable, but it's not a state we're meant to stay in. It's a state that we're actually destined to move out of. And if you've ever scanned the vast list of presentations in this conference, you can see there are innumerable ways to support us out of this disembodied, closed down state. So this is the most analytical slide I'm going to show you, but it can reveal something very, very special. As we go through life, having the many different challenging experiences that close us down, and this closing down disembodying process has the anatomy that I'm showing you here. It's made up of these different pieces. So you might have heard speakers in the conference speak about bringing change by working skillfully with one of these. Just belief, if you can get the right beliefs and change it, it'll create an opening. And if we can work in other ways and maybe take a defense strategy, the tightening of the muscles that we saw in that little child, or some aggressive behavior, and if we can change that, another opening happens. And if we can maybe change an attitude through whatever means we choose in our own personal development work, and whatever's holding that in place, there can be more of an opening. And we can change behaviors and attitudes till there's still more and more and more opening. And you better believe that when we have any level of this opening, we're going to feel a difference. That's why, even if we change a single belief, a core belief, we're going to feel different. We're going to feel the change. And as that change process continues, and as I showed before, more and more of ourselves opens. And with this opening, greater embodiment comes. Something special begins to happen. We begin to have access to what's on the other side of this closed down state that our life experiences have contributed to moving us into. I don't know why I didn't make a slide where I could click and continue opening this, because what I show here is actually where we often get stuck. By this point, life has changed so much from when we were totally closed down that we feel like we're home free, not always realizing that there can be more subtle but very important parts of us still closed down. But what I want to talk about today is what happens when this opening happens. We've all had some of these experiences where we have a portal of access to what's on the other side of these blocks. We hear people talking about removing blocks. And what I've showed you in this slide is what removing a block is all about, how it's done, why it happens, and what's on the other side of those blocks. Several years ago, I had an experience. I did leave university after my father's words entered me in such a devastating way, but I returned to academia many times. And one time, when I returned, I was just there to learn what I wanted to learn. It was never to become something. Becoming something wasn't even in my radar. I racked up a lot of credits, and the time came to finalize a degree. One course I had to take was a linguistic course in generative phonology. I can't tell you what it is, but generative phonology has got some really complicated stuff that you have to learn. It's a little bit like learning calculus with sounds. So when this happened, I was in this class, and the only saving grace was that there was a really great instructor, but she would give really, really hard take-home exams. There'd be about 10 questions, no true false, no easy look up in the book. You had to understand the stuff and be able to work with it. I'd read the 10 questions on the sheet of paper and I'd set it aside. At that time, I was working in a greenhouse and I would go out on the ground in the wide open air. These were wide open greenhouses in Hawaii where the greenhouses were mostly to keep rain off the plants. And as I was out there, having stuffed away these questions where I didn't even understand the questions, let alone the answer, I had an amazing experience where all of a sudden, out of the blue, boom, I'd get it. Number three. And I'd go in the house and I would write it down. And then number four and number one and number nine and number eight. And like that, I would work my way through the entire exam. I would turn it in. My instructor thought I was brilliant. I felt like I was kind of cheating because I didn't really get this stuff at the level I was expressing in the exam. But the next exam would come and I'd do the same thing, equally confused. I'd set it aside and then I'd come back to it. Still, nothing. But as I was working out there in the open air in the greenhouse, all of a sudden the questions that I'd planted, the answers arose. And again, I would ace these tests. I began to become really curious what was going on here. Could I count on this? Yeah. I did come to count on it in the different tests I had to take there. But I wanted to understand it more. Okay. When we become embodied, when we have this opening that I showed you, we come into our physical body. But I want to mention this because it's going to be important for some of you to know that we also have a subtle body. The subtle body has been studied extensively by Dr. Valerie Hunt at the University of California in Los Angeles. And this subtle body has information also, and it holds information, and it can hold trauma and the stresses of some of those earlier experiences. And so as I work with my clients, many times as they begin to embody the emotion, a critical piece of what needs to happen to move into our full human potential, they'll begin to say, yes, I can feel the strong emotion, the rage or the fear or the grief in my body, in my chest, in my legs, but I can also feel it outside my body. An opening begins to happen and they can embody their subtle body as well. And so while I'm not going to go into great depth with this today, I want to be sure I mention it because other presentations during this conference has, you know, and I know that some of you will be interested and concerned about that. Besides that, we also have our collective body. Thomas Hubel just did an amazing summit on collective trauma. The collective body is everything that's not us, our physical body, everything that's physical. You're part of my collective body. The trees, the buildings, the sky, everything is part of what's out there that's not my physical self. And that collective body also has a collective subtle body. And in this larger body, information gets held. Trauma gets held. Imprints from those past earlier experiences get held. So when we get disconnected in our bodies, it can go beyond our physical body. And our physical body is where we want to come back to and reside first. That's what we're focusing on here. But I'd be neglectful not to mention that it's far more of ourselves that we want to move into embodying fully if we're going to ever experience our fullest potential. I think I've got it with the screen, yeah. So today I've just been able to give you, with the help of my slides when I could find them, an invitation into embodiment by having a stronger understanding of where you might be disembodied and realizing that disembodied state is something we all move into. As we begin to work with embodiment, my work is a lot of trauma healing, but I also work with visionary leaders who have done a lot of personal work, who actually find that they aren't as embodied as they thought because we don't know what that embodied state is until we move into it. And so today, what I'd like to do as we come to a close of what we're doing here is open up for a few questions on disembodiment or the transition into embodiment. And I want to let you know that I want to offer you an opportunity as we come to a close of this amazing conference to know that any questions you have or comments or your own personal experience or thoughts, we can connect. I want to be sure to give you my email address and in the subject line to be sure I see your email because I wouldn't recognize your name. Just put embodiment conference. Or I also want to offer you the opportunity to schedule a post-conference conversation with me. And you can do that by clicking here. This is not a sales conversation. Many of you are going to be watching this over the course of many months and a year. But I will have certain openings on my calendar for any of you who would like to connect, because I honor so much the immense effort that has been put into this epic, humongous conference to be able to begin stressing from so many different angles this topic of embodiment. And we're all lion cubs destined to become lions. But if we can know and receive help along the way, what is a way that's going to expand our movement into fuller embodiment? If we can know what that process might look like and the benefits of following it through, we can get there. I'm trying to move out of this share again. How come sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't? Yeah. Am I out of the share now?
No, I don't see so far.
Right now my screen says share screen, but I'm still sharing it.
I'm not seeing that.
I'm so sorry. I've gone through these slides so many times with the tech part, and maybe it's the 6 a.m. time. How do I get out of there? Yeah. Maybe while I'm figuring that out, We can open up to questions if there are any or comments. And again, I'm sorry. Thank you so much for those of you who have been patient with me. I've gone through this so many times, the tech piece. But I think you've got the idea that disembodiment is a chasm that must be crossed if we're ever going to create and move into that opening where so much more of our greater knowing and talents are accessible to us.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Yeah, I just wanted to share the slide with your contact.
So I'm still in that scare, and I don't know why. Oh, I know. Let's try this. Let's try.
Maybe if it doesn't work, you could just post it in the chat.
Mm-hmm. You saw the slide, though, correct?
Okay, so.
Are you seeing me right now?
Maybe David, have you seen it? Okay, meanwhile, yeah, I think it's sharing now. Oh, amazing.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't sharing before when I was talking about the different bodies. Yeah, but so after I've watched many of the presentations in the conference, I know that I felt like, oh my gosh, this is so much in such a short period of time. And if I could only just not only ask a question to the people who I listen to and the people who I haven't, if I could have access to do that, that would be so amazing. And so I want to offer that opportunity to those of you who want. And again, as I said, it's not a sales conversation, as sometimes an offer like this is. And that conversation, while I schedule a half hour, can take 10 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever. But feel free if you would like to follow up or explore anything that I've spoken about today. We can do that or share some of your own wisdom and experiences. That would be really rich for both of us as we continue our journey together back into a state of ever increasing embodiment. Great. And is it possible to put this in the chat so I can come back on screen?
Yeah, I did that already. I just put it in the chat, and I'll be also be posting right now your homepage. And I think we have some questions coming, and I would like to encourage all the participants also, please, if you have questions, this is the right time. So we have a question from Sue. What are some simple things that we could do immediately to embrace embodiment?
Mm-hmm. You know, there are many, many things, but I'm going to give you a couple simple ones. One is, if we know that when we have an emotion and it's not comfortable, we tend to back away from it, as I showed through the many different slides we've had, and that little child in the first slide pulling away. If you can pause, and in the moment, every moment has an emotional component to it. If you can stop and just feel it and name it. I'm feeling at peace. Notice it with your awareness and then feel it in your body. I'm feeling sad. Notice the feeling with your awareness and then feel it in your body. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling scared. Not just up here, but let it come down and then feel it in your body. That is a very important first step to start moving towards embodiment. When we can embody strong emotional states, we grow the capacity to embody the highest spiritual states, which I'm sure many of you are aware of or moving towards. But our human potential involves moving towards that. Another thing is, if you're really feeling overwhelmed, if you can bring that strong emotion and contain it in your body in a different way, what I do is I cross my arms and pull. And I cross my ankles and pull apart. That creates a tension that helps to keep me in my body from disembodying. I could go on for another hour with simple tools, and you can open your vision, not too far, but but open it so that there's more space for the whatever is held in the emotion of the disembodied experience to come out. And you can buy the library from the Embodiment Conference and look at the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different ways that the presenters have shown to do this. But Sue, I hope that's a beginning for you. Contain something to contain yourself in your body if there's strong emotional states, but also to move towards noticing the emotion of the moment and feeling it in your body rather than the natural state in response to pull away from a hot stove.
All right. So the other question is, how do we start early with kids?
That's such an important question. And how I wish my mom had been somewhere like this to ask that before I came along. You know, I think one is knowing that children experience emotions at very young ages. Can we begin giving them a language for it? And can we begin as parents knowing that the full spectrum of human emotions are supposed to be there? Anger is, we're supposed to have the ability to become angry. We're made with the ability to experience hate. We're not meant to move into the behaviors that those emotions can give rise to, but to be able to name their emotions for them. Whoa, you're really angry, depending on the child. You know, you're really angry. Whoa, you're so sad. And when they move into really the tantrumy kind of expression, the anger or whatever, to be able to hold them in that emotion and to squeeze them, not to restrain them, but to contain them, to provide a bigger body of your own for a small child, to hold the size of that emotion so that they can express that emotion as they are until you can successfully have them calm down, but that they can stay in their body while experiencing it. I was recently teaching in Australia, and there was a therapist who had done a tremendous amount of somatic training, trauma resolution work. And she was learning the art, as many therapists are learning now, the art and skills of expanding our body to open so we can hold strong emotions. And she said these words, she goes, I didn't know that I could feel terror and not go into a freeze at the same time. So with your children, that they can grow up saying, yeah, I can feel my anger. I can feel my sadness. I can feel whatever I feel, but I can do it in my body. So with that particular type of strong emotion, you can contain the little ones. Validating the emotions. I was trained in a body of work that sometimes did amazing work, but it referred to negative emotions and positive emotions. Negative behaviors can arise out of some emotions, but they're not negative. We're developed to have these. We're not meant to move into the behaviors that have these. And so I think if you take any of the tools, or if you even contact me, whoever this is that asks this question, I can give you some very specific more specific tools, depending on the age of your child, because a teenager, you might approach differently than a three-year-old or an eight-year-old. But in many classrooms, these types of skills are being brought in so that our children can learn we can be embodied and have the emotional component of the experiences that are happening in the moment. And those emotions can be strong and we can still be embodied, but that capacity needs to be built. Yeah, I wish we could talk about that more.
Yeah, the clarification came from the person who asked, for those who have medical condition, how do you go about it? They feel a lot physically and emotionally.
Yes.
So I guess about the kids who have medical conditions.
Oh, the children who have, yeah, children or adults who have medical conditions, we yearn to have vibrant health. We yearn for that. And often I work with what's underlying problems. Many people come to me with medical conditions. My dad and brothers were doctors. I'm not. But I work with what's underneath that, if not attended to, will manifest as medical conditions. And so when we can embody strong emotions, my clients have their medical conditions, real medical conditions, the symptoms begin to diminish. So when we embody our emotions, strong emotional states without overwhelm, as we build the capacity, the ability to do that, you can actually have this be an important component of the physical healing process. Medical doctors aren't doing that. That's why we need to work in a coordinated way. That's why I hope medical doctors are here in this embodiment conference, as well as every other health professional and mental health professional and parent and educators, because we all work with people who have bodies that are in compromised states. And if we understand that, we can do some of the simple interventions. And this talk wasn't primarily about the interventions, but we can do interventions that can be hugely successful. Anything else?
Okay. We had one other question. Yeah, but we unfortunately have to wrap up. So I would kindly ask Lynn and people who voted for this question about education, please post it kindly directly to the email of the presenter. We have the contact, or can also post it and try to approach it via Facebook.
Yeah, please contact me. If you're in this conference, there's a reason for yourself personally and for the people you work with. So I would love to connect further. And again, thank you so much for my 6 a.m. attempt to maneuver through my slides and technology. And thank you so much, Oksana, and all the staff of the Embodiment Conference for the amazing job you've done bringing such a service to the world and to so many people. It's just been a pure honor to be able to see what you're contributing.
Wow, that's so overwhelming. Thank you so much. I just want to remind all the participants, you can still contact the presenter. Please also use our Facebook group to share your thoughts, your opinions. It's the last day, so you can also get a lot of contacts, a lot of useful information. Stay on our channel. The next presentation will be at 12 p.m. from Agnes Kowalski on grief recovery, a three-part approach. And remember that this session will be available for the next 48 hours for free. And we're encouraging you to purchase the Embodiment Conference package by upgrading your membership on the portal. And yeah, all the links already were just posted by David, our kind host. And I just want to ask for the last top tip from Michelle on how to stay embodied.
That's a question?
Yeah, the top tip, your favorite tip, how to stay embodied.
The top tip for how to stay embodied. Pay attention to the fact that you have a body. Most of us live kind of out here, dissociated. Pull yourself in and just notice your body. The ability to be embodied when we've been disembodied is a skill to grow. And again, the top tip, to be really honest, if you contact me, I can give you the top tip for you when I've had a chance to meet you even for a couple of minutes, because it's not the top tip is actually not the same for everyone. So I'm giving the general top tip, but if you want the specific top tip, I can give that to you. Great. Thank you for adding that in.
Thank you, everyone, and hope to see you on the other sessions. Enjoy your day.
Bye-bye. Thank you.